Hi everyone, and welcome back to the Lake Health and Wellbeing podcast, where we aim to give you interesting health news, views, and interviews. So today we're so delighted to have an interview for you. So we are going to be speaking to the lovely Joanne Hamilton. Hi Joanne. Thank you.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And thank you so much for having me, and hello to your audience. Hello, hello.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for joining us. So today we're going to be focusing on fibroids. So as a lot of you know, we've been focusing a lot of our attention over the past couple of years on fibroids. And so fibroids are non-cancerous growths that develop in or around the woman's womb. And fibroids are very common, and especially very common in Black women. But despite fibroids being really common, there's not a lot of attention focused on fibroids, and it can be a sensitive topic, so a lot of women don't speak about it. And the problem with that is that we know that many women are suffering in silence, people find it hard to find information and support. So what we've been doing is raising awareness, and one way that we've been doing that is that we've been encouraging women to share their stories. And we know that by sharing their stories, this can provide a lot of support, and kind of people who are just being diagnosed find a lot of support from reading other women's stories, and we find it provides a lot of comfort. So that's why we invited lovely Joanne to come on today, just to share her experience with fibroids and what she's learned from it. So before we get into this lovely interview, Joanne, do you want to tell people a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yes, sure, of course. Well, thank you again for having me. I'm happy to share my story. And so my name is Joanne Hamilton, and I am currently based in China. I live outside of Shanghai, about an hour or so outside of Shanghai, in a city called Kunshan. Mm-hmm. And I'm in education at the moment. So I'm teaching at an academy here. I teach world literature to Chinese students, which is a first for me, very interesting. Because prior to this, I was doing a lot of guest lecturing at various universities, and I did some projects with high schools, but this is my first time actually teaching in secondary school. Oh, and working with Chinese students, so that's very exciting. And when I'm not doing that, I'm working on building up my platform, formerly Secret Birds, soon to be Rare Birds, which is an online magazine and lifestyle platform that celebrates early stage women entrepreneurs in developing economies. So between my teaching and building my business, I stay very busy.
I can imagine. And Joanne is just doing great, great work. So thank you for everything that you do to support women in business. So thank you.
Yes, indeed.
So that is great stuff. So I guess we should just get into it. So I guess we should just start at the beginning of your fibroids journey. And so do you want to tell us a little bit about maybe when your fibroids journey began? When did you first notice symptoms and that kind of thing?
Sure, it was a long time ago. Your listeners should know that I turned 40 in July.
Yay, happy birthday.
I know, thank you. 40. I know, it's supposed, everyone says it's an important time, so let's see how it goes. But it was way back when wow. I was living in the US at the time, because I left the Caribbean when I was 18, mm-hmm. and I lived in the US for 10 years, right before I was about to leave the US and move to the UK. Because I moved to the UK in 2006, so like around 2004, 2005. So I was in my 20s back then. I was about 25, 26, around that area, or closer to, 25, 26. Mm-hmm. And I just started having sharp pains in my uterus area, lower abdomen area, what have you. And I didn't know why. And I started investigating. And through investigations and going to several doctors and having everything prodded and poked inside of me, and resulting in a no illnesses or not whatnot, but just a doctor just casually saying, "Oh, you have fibroids," mm-hmm. and kind of from there, one thing led to the next, and that's when I realized, okay, these little things inside are causing problems. So it's been a long time when you consider age 26 to where I am now, age 40, almost 40, and I still have them. So it's lifelong journey with these fibroids.
Wow.
So like, I've accepted that they're just always going to be there until if I ever decide to go to get a to have the entire, whether I decide to do a procedure again or if I decide to see have my entire womb, everything taken out, or go through menopause, I've just accepted that they're always going to be part of my life. Yeah, they're always going to be there.
And how do you feel about that? How do you feel about the fact that you have to live with the fibroids?
It's irritating, you know. Of course. But I think because it's been so long and I've learned how to manage them, you know, like with everything else, you just kind of accept, you get on with it, and you just learn to live with it. But it has its pros and its cons. I mean, okay. The cons that, you know, when it gets close to my period, I get a bit more bloated than usual, and I have a bit more pain at times. But the pros is that it kind of forces me to pay more attention to my health and to my body. So I would say I'm perhaps much more healthier because I have fibroids than not.
Okay. Actually, that's interesting, because a lot of women have said that to us, that the fibroids is almost like a wake-up call to them.
Oh, yeah.
Look at their lifestyle, reflect, and actually change their lifestyle and become healthier.
So, yeah, and like I mentioned in the blog that I wrote for your network, it brought me closer to my feminine self, which is something I think I was lacking in my life at the time. So I think out of these bad experiences, there's always something good. So,
No, that's really good. And maybe we can explore that a little bit more. So I guess if we looked at two things, one is like, what was your lifestyle like, I guess, before you were diagnosed with fibroids? And have you changed it significantly since then?
Yeah, I think, I've been a vegan for a long time. Mm. So this upcoming year will make 23 years that I've been a vegan. So when I was diagnosed, I was a vegan. And I would consider myself to be a relatively healthy person, living a healthy lifestyle, a vegan lifestyle, what have you. But I think what was lacking at the time was I was always very busy. I was in the corporate world working, so I worked very long hours. I worked in a very male-dominated technical field, in real estate construction field. Mm-hmm. And I think I was just overdoing it and burning, how does the expression go, burning both sides of the candle. Yes. And I think because despite eating well and despite, you know, exercising and being quote unquote healthy, I think internally my life was not quite balanced. And I think post finding out that I have fibroids and going through all the motions and learning about my body more and the different tools that I have to manage myself and just incorporating more things like yoga and meditation and things like that into my life, I'm definitely much more internally balanced now than I was before. I'm more inward, whereas I think before it was more about, okay, eating the right foods and exercising and all that. Now it's more about filtering. What are the things you're putting in your head? Yes. What are the energy that you have around you? Yes, the food is important, but it's more about the internal stuff, like your mind and really trying to focus your mind on the right things and focusing your, I mean, I don't want to sound woo to your audience, but I really believe everything's got energy, you know, and the people you have around you and the things you're involved with and just trying to be really aligned with my values and who I am. And I think that's come as a result of this entire fibroids journey. So that's what I would say changed a lot.
Okay, that's great. So I guess it's just encouraged you to kind of have a holistic approach to your health and well-being. So thinking about your mind, your body, your soul. And I think in the world that we live in, it's so true that we're all running around so much that we don't necessarily take care of our kind of mental well-being. And I think people are constantly stressed and consciously anxious, but they don't realize it.
And so, that fuels the fibroids. It fuels the stress. And, you know, I was just listening to something today. This guy, I don't know if you're familiar with Sadhguru. He's this Indian. He's
a young guy, right? Fairly young guy.
Oh, no, you're probably talking about, what's his name? Jay Shetty. He's good too. But this is an older guy. Okay. But he was talking, I was listening to him today, and he was talking about how, when it medically, it has been proven that whenever you get anger or in your body, or whenever you react in a hostile way, anxiety, anything like that, you're literally releasing poison into your body. Mm. And he was breaking down, you know, the analysis and the chemicals and everything. And I thought, oh my God, I think that's how I was before, you know, just on autopilot, going, 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 going. And I think somehow all of those hormones and just all of the, that toxic stuff, I think really contributed to, perhaps maybe contributed to the creation of these things in my womb. I think I'm a lot more in tune with my body now than before. I've learned that we store our stress and our anxieties in different parts of our bodies. So for some people, it's their neck. For some people, it's their back. Maybe for me, it's my womb, you know? Yeah. So there's a lot of things I've been exploring as a result, like somatic reactions and how you feel pain physically in your body. And for me, it might be where my fibroids are. So again, all of these things have been a result of fibroids, which probably I wouldn't have been exposed to if I had not had fibroids.
Yeah. So I can now appreciate what you mean by there's the good things about fibroids and that it just helped you reflect. So I think that's, because I think people might think, oh, they're pros to having fibroids, but I think I like that in the sense that it has helped you reflect and think about your lifestyle. So that's
And you know, I really believe in that statement, that nothing happens to you, it happens for you. And I think everything that we go through, whether we want, you know, depending on how we want to see it, it's all a lesson. It's all there to teach you something. So
Oh, wonderful. So I think let's go back a little bit. So we rewind about 10 years and you first notice you have a symptom, you have some abdominal pain.
Yes.
How long did it take you to actually think, actually, you know, something is really wrong here, I need to go to the doctor? Did you just grin and bear it, or did you just think, oh, this is like unusual and I'm going to go straight to the doctor?
I think it took me about, I would say if I had to quantify it, maybe a month or so, because I knew it was bizarre because the pain is so, it's like a dull ache and it's just there. And I've never experienced anything like that before. It wasn't something that I'd experienced when I was menstruating or anything else, and I thought, this is very strange. So initially it was just, I need to go to the doctor. And you know, I went to about three different doctors and they did everything. I remember having all these tests. They put me on birth control for a week and they did this and they did that. And like in my blog, the one of them said, oh, it's all in your mind, you're depressed, and all these things. And I remember when the one doctor said, oh, you have fibroids. Then she goes, but fibroids don't cause pain. And I thought, are you sure? Because I'm in pain. And it's not until I moved to the UK and a British doctor said to me, no, you know, depending on where these fibroids are, they actually can create a lot of discomfort and pain. Yeah. And that really drove the nail home, because when I was in the US, the doctors insisted that fibroids wasn't causing pain, which I thought was so strange because every woman is different.
I guess it's strange because not only do women themselves are not aware of fibroids, we're now finding that doctors themselves are not really 100% aware of fibroids, the impact. And so your experience is very similar to a lot of other women's experiences where they go to the doctor and the doctor's like, oh, you're fine, it's just fibroids, oh, you know, no big deal kind of thing. And so there's no appreciation actually of the magnitude of fibroids. And so how do you feel about that? How do you feel that actually, you know, you went through three doctors to actually get to a solution?
One thing I've learned through this experience is that doctors and how doctors are trained and what they know and what they don't know and how they actually work, I've learned that many of them, they're not trained to understand things like fibroids. You know, when you go to a doctor, a Western doctor is trained to find the problem. So it's a series of tests. Okay, we ruled out cancer. Boom, she doesn't have that. Okay, endometriosis. No, she doesn't have that. They don't look at things like as fibroids as problems. They're just seen as all these unexplainable things. And I think unless you go to a specialist, and I mean a super specialist, you know, someone that's really into endometriosis and fibroids and PCOS and all that kind of stuff. And usually those people aren't doctors. They tend to be health coaches. They tend to be specialized nurses, but they're generally just not doctors. And I think that has a lot to do with the way doctors are trained. It's the same thing, like we know doctors aren't trained in nutrition, really. Mm-hmm. And then the way doctors are supposed to work, they don't really have time to sit there and really have a conversation with you. So I think since then, I've learned a lot about the medical profession. I've learned a lot about how doctors themselves are trained. I've learned a lot about You know, you have to really empower yourself as a patient and not expect the doctor to be some kind of genius, because they're
yes,
not.
Yeah.
A lot of doctors just don't know. And also how doctors are failing patients. And it's kind of sad, because so many women nowadays would prefer to go see a health coach than a doctor to talk about, to discuss their periods and PCOS and all of those things. And that says a lot about
doctors. It does. It really does. Because I think the time also is an issue, because particularly in the UK, where a doctor only has, or GP only has 8 minutes. So I think if you have a health coach, then the health coach has a lot more time to kind of dig deep. And so people will be more comfortable going to a health coach.
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. And I think they just feel they'll get more sympathy from a health coach.
And usually the health coach has been through what you've been through, which is why they're that health coach in the first place. Because they realize, wow, look at what doctors, look at the experience I had. There must be other women who need what this kind of service, because I was there. So you get the empathy, you get the attention, and you get the community, because a lot of the times it comes with a network, and you're not, like you said, 8 minutes. You know, when you go to your GP in the UK, it's boom, boom, boom. You ask questions, you sit there. It's like a conveyor belt, sadly. You know, I love the NHS, don't get me wrong, but things like, I mean, when I was in the UK and my fibroids returned the second time, I had a UK doctor say to me, I'm sorry, but I can't waste a lot of time on this. You know, I have women coming in here with more serious matters, and this is
something.
And I felt so bad, but that's how it is.
I can imagine, but it's just, and I think that is the general feeling, is that fibroids are not life threatening, you know, women can put up with it, you know, and I think that's kind of the general feeling, which is why fibroids doesn't get a lot of attention. But I think people forget just how much it impacts women's day-to-day life.
They cause a lot of pain. They cause pain during intercourse. There's a lot of women who experience a lot of discomfort during intercourse because of fibroids. They cause heavy bleeding. They cause a lot of discomfort. I mean, there are times where it's like someone else, another lady I spoke to who's got fibroids, she said it's like being pregnant. But these things are there and you feel them all the time. You feel bloated. I mean, it's not something that anybody should have to cope with, but it is what it is.
Yeah. And I think we just need to see what we can do to really try and support women and make sure that their journey from diagnosis or from symptoms to diagnosis is as smooth as possible. Because to have to go to three different doctors like you did, you know, it shouldn't be happening, really, really.
And then when I got to the UK, I went to one doctor, and then she was very empathetic, and then she recommended me to have the laparoscopy.
Okay.
And then they grew back 7 years later, went, tried to see that doctor again, and found out he died, because he was also going through malpractice, because he had done a similar surgery on another lady where she died. It just became this drama. It was ridiculous. And so I think that was just the universe's way of saying, you know what, you need to learn to cope with this thing. And that's what my Chinese doctor said to me, my acupuncturist. She said, you're never going to fight or solve this problem until you solve what's happening inside of you. She said, yes, you know, it took 7 years for these things to grow back, but she said 7 years is a long time, you know. So you know, what is it that's happening inside of you? And I guess that was a turning moment for me. And you realize, you know, it's something I need to really look within. So,
that's really good advice to look within and see what's happening within to try and solve the problem. So that's
because
pretty good
advice. It's all connected. It's all connected. The food you eat, the thoughts, everything is connected. And sometimes we forget that.
Yes. So let's see. Let's go back to, you went to the first doctor. The first doctor did lots of tests, but they couldn't find anything. Is that what happened?
Yes, loads and loads of tests, couldn't find anything. And then a friend of mine sent me to her doctor, who was a specialist in oncology, mainly breast cancer. He didn't find anything, and he ran another series of tests. And then I went to a third doctor who also did some more tests, and whilst doing those tests said, oh, did you know you have fibroids? And I said, no. I said, could those be the culprits? And she insisted that it didn't cause pain. And she gave me some over-the-counter stuff. In America, it's called, you know, Advil.
Pain relief.
Painkillers. And it didn't work. Of course, it didn't work. And then I moved to the UK and I said, you know what, I'm just going to give this a go over here. And I got some relief because the doctor I went to actually had experience with fibroids.
Okay. Okay.
And she suggested me for the to go see the consultant. And within 3-4 months, I had the surgery and they were gone and life was grand.
Hilarious.
Until 7 years later, they grew back.
And then it all started again.
And then it all started again and they grew back bigger and stronger than before. So, yeah.
Yeah. So at the point when you're in the UK and you saw the doctor said you had fibroids. So In terms of the treatment options, did they give you a list of treatment options or how did they go about saying which one?
I remember the doctor saying to me, we want to make sure you don't have endometriosis. So We're going to do a laparoscopy. So he went in looking for endometriosis and he didn't find anything. And he said, you know, whilst we were in there, we saw all of them and we just took them out.
Oh, wow.
And because we knew, and he said, you know, you could tell based on where they're located that they were creating discomfort because They're resting against your bladder. There's one up front right here in the front part of your uterus. So we just took them out. He took all of them out. And it was amazing how it was just instant. It was just instant. The pain relief was instant.
Oh,
everything
really? Wow.
Was, oh yeah, because that's, they were causing problems, you know? Mm-hmm. And and then they grew back. So, and they grew back in the same place. You see, it depends on where they grow. Mm-hmm. And I remember him saying to me, don't worry about anything. You're a young woman. Just enjoy your life. Relax. We've taken them out. It's going to be fine. And they grew back. And then when I went to see him again, he had died. So,
well, that's interesting. Did they tell you, like, or were you kind of shocked that they removed them, or did they say, oh, if we see anything, we'll treat them when you went in?
No, all he said was, we need to go in and see what's happening inside to make sure that you get the right diagnosis.
Okay.
And he said, I think you may have endometriosis because he said, even though these fibroids cause pain, we're not entirely sure. We just want to have a look. Fine, you know, a laparoscopy is keyhole surgery. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
He went in there and he said there was absolutely nothing. He said, but we saw all of these growths. We saw all of them. And He said, we just took all of them out. And he was laughing. He said, because, you know, it's amazing how they just all grow in there and they just take over, you know. And he showed me pictures and everything.
Wow.
And
how many of them were there?
I think I had about 9 of them removed.
9. It's hard to even fathom that many can fit.
Mm-hmm. You know, some women, their fibroids grow so big that they look pregnant.
Yes.
There's grapefruits and, you know, it's crazy, these things that just grow in your body. But he said to me, I remember him saying to me at the time, we don't know what causes these things. All we know is that they occur in childbearing years. As long as you can have a child, you're going to have fibroids. He's like, you're never going to go away until you go through menopause or unless you have a complete surgery, hysterectomy. And he said, I don't suggest you have a hysterectomy because he said women have babies all the time with fibroids.
Yeah.
And he told me what happens is it just depends. Sometimes the fibroids stay the same whilst the woman is pregnant. Sometimes they shrink. Sometimes they grow. And depending on how, you know, we make the surgery, when it's time for labor, the surgery might be, we might have to go to surgery. It's a bit complicated, but, you know, don't worry about it. It happens all the time. He didn't seem worried. It just seemed like a very common thing, but he was concerned with the pain. And he said, you know, this is going to give you pain relief. And let's just hope that, you know, during this time that they don't grow back. But they did.
They did.
And they came back with a vengeance.
Yeah.
They were upset with me for taking them out the first time. So
you're like, yeah, how you like me now?
Exactly. So they came back a little bit bigger. I was told I have one that's the size of like a mini grapefruit inside.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, if we go back to the surgery, how was your recovery afterwards? Was it painful?
No, it wasn't painful at all. I remember being in the hospital for about maybe 2 nights.
Okay.
They just wanted to make sure that all my organs were operating properly before they went out. And it wasn't painful. It was keyhole surgery. It was done really well. You can't see anything. It doesn't hit. There's no scarring or anything. But of course, I had to not do anything too strenuous, don't mm-hmm. lift anything. And I healed. I just listened to Dr. Donors. I stayed in bed and I healed really well. And everything was completely fine after that.
Wonderful. So, wonderful. And did you have to do any like care? Like, was there any care that you had to do?
No,
infection or anything? Okay.
No, because with keyhole surgery, it's literally a tiny little pin going in there. And that's the whole idea. It's just, there's nothing that you have to do. And it was fine. And then a few weeks later, I went back and they just checked to make sure everything was in its right place and everything was working the way it's supposed to work in there on all the organs. And it was completely fine. But when it grew back, I knew the pain was so familiar to me that when I got that pain, I just knew they're back. Yeah.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I was really disappointed. Yeah. 7 years later, yeah. I had the surgery in 2007 and they grew back. Well, not that they grew back, but I learned that they grew back in 2014.
14.
Because they had been there before, but I just didn't know.
Yeah. So then after you've recovered from the surgery, you felt absolutely fine. You felt, like you said, you felt lighter and there was no pain.
Everything was perfect.
And then fast forward to 7 years, you felt the exact same pain?
Same exact dull ache, same thing, which means that they grew back in the same place.
Exact same place.
And I went to the GP and she recommended me to go, it was in East London, over to one of the clinics there. Did you know that test you have to do where you have to drink bottles and bottles of water?
Yeah.
And then they put me down. Oh, I hate that. And I remember it burning because it was so uncomfortable. And the nurse showed me all of them. She's like, oh, there's that one, and there's that one, and there's another one. And and I went back to my GP, and she just wasn't, very empathetic at all. She just didn't seem to be bothered. It was just sort of, I've got people with bigger problems, get out my office kind of thing. And it's a shame because...
It is. And it's funny because...
that way, yeah.
No, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, it's funny because a lot of people think women would be more sympathetic.
Not at all. So no. It's a shame. Even when I was in the US, I remember I had three doctors I saw, two of them were female, and they weren't. They were very sort of... like, come on, get on with it. What's wrong with you? You know, this is fine. I think sometimes, maybe, not all the time, maybe men can be a bit more empathetic because they don't have our body parts. Maybe it's the familiarity that the female doctors have, that they're not always so, I don't know. Sometimes I think doctors generally can be very cold.
I think it's a coping mechanism. I suppose they have to be a bit detached.
They have to be.
Yes, I think it's a bit of a coping mechanism. But then at the same time, I kind of feel that as a woman doctor, you would be a little bit sympathetic, but maybe they're just thinking, even they might have had fibroids and thought, oh man, my fibroids are fine. I didn't have any problems. So why are you complaining? Maybe that could be.
No. And the GP, she was female. She was Indian. She was young. She was... everything that you would think would make her be a bit more understanding, but she was not. She was just, no. And then when I got referred to the consultant over at UCL, the two consultants were there. And I remember one of them, she was very kind and she was trying to be nice, but she was junior. Mm-hmm. And when she went over to the senior consultant, explained the situation, the senior consultant said, absolutely not. We are not going to do any surgery or anything again, because all this is going to do is damage her chances of having a child, because her uterus may not be as strong if we go back in there again and take them out. And she was very firm.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how did you feel about that? Did you feel maybe a bit helpless or hopeless?
I think at the time I just felt like, okay, what is going on here? The first GP was a disaster. The consultants aren't very kind. The doctor is dead. What else could go wrong? And I remember calling my friends and we went on to Good Street and we just sat there looking at each other like, this is unbelievable. We were having coffee and shit. I'm just thinking to myself, what is going on? You know, but not hopeless, but frustrated.
Okay.
You want to solve the problem, but you realize there's no quick fix.
And
I guess these doctors in in their, I guess, obviously they were looking out for me, because she could have just said, fine, if that's what you want, we'll do it.
Yes.
But she kept insisting. She said, you know what, if we go back in there again, your uterus weakens every time we remove these things. And I guess since then, things have progressed and there's multiple options now for women, as opposed to just taking them out. But she was just insisting. She said, listen, if you want to have a baby, go have. I remember her saying exactly this. She said, if you want to have a baby, go have a baby. Fibroids aren't going to stop you from having
it.
She said, but I said, it's the pain and the discomfort that I can't cope with. And she said, well, you're just going to have to learn how to deal with it. And these were women. These were female doctors. Yeah.
So to be honest, it looks like they didn't give you any advice, really. They just said,
I wasn't referred to any fibroid clinic. I wasn't referred to any fibroid anything. I remember listening to Women's Hour, a Radio 4 one day, and hearing another lady talk about her fibroid story. And that's when I learned that there was like a fibroid clinic somewhere up north in England somewhere. But it was just through information. It wasn't from the doctors, it wasn't from the GPs. It's not, like you said, it's not something that they seriously.
No, I think because it's not life-threatening, but then they're forgetting that actually it affects a woman's day-to-day life quite significantly.
Exactly.
Okay, so you've left the doctor, they've said, okay, there's not much we can do, try and manage your symptoms. What do you do next? What do you think, and what do you feel, and what do you decide to do next?
Well, I used to go regularly to the Chinese clinic in Camden. And I remember when I went for one of my acupuncture visits, I used to do acupuncture and massage there regularly, like once a month. I remember talking about it with the Chinese doctor. And she said, you know, we treat those things here. And one conversation led to the next. And then that's how I got into acupuncture, specifically for my uterus and for stress and so on and so forth. And that's when I kind of learned from her that the problem is a lot deeper than, okay, you just have groups inside of the uterus. And that's when we got into, you know, keeping a diary and looking at your period and understanding what's happening in your body and foods and all those kinds of things. So it was through that Chinese doctor and the clinic in Camden that I was able to find some management through them for my fibroids.
Okay, great stuff. So you changed, you looked at your diet and then completely looked at your lifestyle.
Yeah, because apparently even though I'm a vegan, there's still some foods that promote the growth of fibroids, apparently, that I didn't
So did you kind of look at maybe foods that might contain natural hormones in them, or it wasn't so specific?
Yeah, and I stopped drinking soy milk because I learned that soy milk produces more estrogen, which then creates the fibroids in the first place. And foods that help to regulate my hormones, more of them, and less of foods that produce estrogen. So that's something I didn't know that I learned from my Chinese doctor. And then we started talking about just average things, you know, like, what is your day like? What time do you get up in the morning? Do you drink coffee? How much coffee do you drink? You know, what's your job like? What's your lifestyle like? What time do you go to sleep? Who do you interact with on a daily basis? Or do you always feel aggressive? Do you always feel like you're constantly working and you're stressed out? Just all of those things. And I think she kind of came to the conclusion that, wow, you know, you're just like every other woman in London. You're just running around and your health is suffering as a result.
Wow. I love that. I love that she actually got you to think about those things. Who do you interact with? What's your day like? What time do you wake up? And I'm assuming she got to the bottom of you probably didn't get a lot of sleep. You were living on caffeine. Was that about right?
Yeah. And just, I think for, you know, it's normal because she's in London and all of her clients are female and we're all going in there, you know, some of us 7 days a week to this amazing clinic in Camden because I learned about it through a friend of mine. So I think I just fit the typical profile of the London woman.
City lady. Yeah.
A city lady, definitely. And she just kept saying to me, you know, you're looking for these quick fixes and it's just not going to work. She said, it's not going to work. You know, you have to think about exactly what's going on inside of you. And we used to have a lot of in-depth conversations. Good. And I remember when she stuck the first acupuncture in my uterus, my lower stomach, and I just thought, oh my God, this is bizarre. But yeah, it made you think about a lot of things. And, you know, I remember her saying to me, acupuncture is not going to reduce the size of your fibroids, but what it's going to do is it's going to help you relax, and it's going to shift the pain and sort of the energies from this particular area, because this is the area where you have a problem.
Yeah, that's so interesting. That is really interesting. So through your conversations with her, you focused your diet more on foods that would help balance your hormones. Can you share what type of foods were that you focused on?
A lot. I at the time I used to eat a lot of greens, but not as much as I do today. Okay. So more leafy greens, a lot more leafy greens.
Okay.
So lots of kale, lots of spinach, lots of bok choy, like everything green. before I my favorite greens are spinach, but. And that's all I used to eat. But she's like, no, you've got to eat lots and lots of different types of greens. I started drinking a lot of tea.
Okay.
A lot more natural tea.
Herbal teas, yeah.
Herbal teas, and stayed away from coffee. I'm proud to say I haven't drunk coffee in a long time. Once in a while I have a little cup, but generally she said you've got to stay away from the coffee.
Yeah. So yeah.
Definitely helps them to grow. We talked a lot about certain drinks that that will raise my hormone levels. We talked about milk. We talked about certain oils. I mean, I usually only use olive oil, but she talked about certain kinds of oils that apparently aren't good for people with, like, just all these different things we discussed. And she said more, I remember her saying more colorful greens, so more carrots and more red cabbage and more, you know, yellow peppers, and just a lot more of the colorful
fruits and veg. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, that's
as opposed to, I ate lots of different kinds of fruit and veg, but obviously I would focus more on the ones that I liked. The ones that I liked aren't necessarily the ones that are good for my friend. Yeah. And we kept a period diary. So every month I had to write down every day I got my period, what color the blood flow was, the texture, how I felt on that day, and we would always talk about that. And funny enough, it was the same pattern every time. And I guess that's what she wanted to see and to identify.
Okay. And so what did that tell her? Like, what did the texture, the color, did that tell her anything specific, or was she just wanting to see if you had a regular cycle?
I remember her saying to me that color matters. You know, you're not supposed to have a period that's very, very dark, like cranberry juice. It's supposed to be bright and vibrant.
Yes.
So I think she was trying to see if it was something even more beyond just the fibroids, if it was something actually happening in my uterus. Generally, things down there just weren't working. I don't know, but that wasn't the problem. It was more about getting me, I guess, to understand my moods, you know, like my mood swings and how to regulate my mood swings. And she taught me about things like, this is when your estrogen level is very high, so you know you're going to be like this. What are your triggers when you're like this? This is when your estrogen levels are quite low. This is when your body's going to be tired, so you probably don't want to. Like, I would do really stupid things. Like, I used to do a lot of running, and I would run every day. I'd run when I have my period. And she'd say to me, why are you running when you have a period? And I said, because I'm fine. Nothing feels wrong. You know, it's fine. And she said, but that's not the point. She's like, in your cycle, there's certain times where you should not be doing any kind of rigorous exercise. Even though you feel good, it's not good for your body. And these are things that no one tells you. Because so many women don't get pain when they have the period. And they feel fine. And that's how I was. So I just thought, well, what's wrong? I would just go running. But it was actually really bad.
That is so interesting, because I think a lot of people feel pressure to just soldier through their period, and they're like, and I think they feel even bad about themselves if they have to lie down and relax for a day or two during their period. And I remember
like London, when everybody's going.
Everybody's on the go. And I just remember I used to have really bad periods when I was in my 20s. And I felt obligated, like, I have to go to work. And I remember one day going to work, and I always used to get really ill, like throw up and just be really, really ill. And I remember somebody, I think my boss, saying, why are you doing this to yourself? Because I'd literally be at work. And one day I literally was like, couldn't walk, and I was like almost crawling up the stairs, and she was like, why do you do this to yourself? And she had to literally drop me home and say, look, just relax, lie down until you feel better and come back to work when you feel better. But I think there's that kind of pressure to actually just soldier on. I'm a strong Black woman and I'm going to get through it. And I think it's dangerous.
I work in construction, which is a male dominated industry. You know, a woman doesn't go to work and say she has a period.
Yeah.
You get on with it. And you don't want to stand out as being the woman. You don't want to be giving special preference because you have your period. There's all this kind of psychological stuff as well. But what you're doing is damaging your body. Because when you have your period, no matter how good you feel, you're technically, there's certain points where you really should be resting. Mm. You know? And I learned, for example, there's certain times where I'm more creative than not. There's just so many things about my cycle. Like, I was so ignorant. I still don't know how I got through up until, you know, my 30s, not knowing these things. But I knew the basics. I knew how my body worked. I knew the science. But I didn't know how it was deeply connected to my femininity and my womanhood. That's the stuff I didn't know. Because that's not what we're taught. We're not taught those things.
No, not at all. And you're not alone. And most of us probably don't really think too deeply about our menstrual cycle. It's just like an irritating thing that happens every month. And a lot of us just don't really think about it. So you're not alone. I'm sure there are plenty of people listening that are just in the same position where we just don't know enough about what we should be doing.
But it's so deep. I mean, there's so much depth. You know, there probably would have been a time in my life where somebody said to me, you know, your whole life, your whole being as a woman is designed around this mechanism of your uterus, I would probably just laugh. Like, what are you talking about? But it is, you know, everything about you, you know, when you're very creative, that's connected to your hormones. And, you know, those times where you need to relax, and that's connected to your hormones, and, you know, how you should work and when you should work. And I think as women, no one teaches us these things. No. And we're just taught to be as masculine as possible, but we're not. We're women.
Exactly. It just sounds like it's been such an enlightening journey for you.
You have no idea.
So now you looked at your diet. She's actually asked you to reflect on your life. So did you do any other changes? So did you try and get more sleep? Try and reduce your stress levels? Did you do any of that?
I did a lot of different things. I mean, I went as far as to leave my career behind, but not because of that per se. I needed change and I wanted to leave anyway. But I started asking myself some questions, you know, do I want to be in the corporate world for the rest of my life? No. Mm. Do I have intentions to be there for the rest of my life? Absolutely not. Do I feel like the 10 years that I've been here, I've done enough and I want to do anything else? I'm okay with that. I'm content. It's time to move on. And I think that was a big change, because the corporate lifestyle is, and particularly if you work in these male-dominated industries, these fast-paced industries, they can be detrimental to oneself. I know it's probably not the most politically correct thing to say in an era of getting women on boards and getting women to the top and so on and so forth, but I think there's a price that women's bodies pay for working in these hyper masculine, hyper work environments. And work isn't working for anybody, whether it's men or women. And I think we really need to reassess these lifestyles, because it's damaging everybody, and everybody's stressed out. You know, women are losing their hair and their periods are going crazy and all this stuff because they want to get ahead in this world. But is it worth your health at the end of the day?
No, definitely not. So how do you feel now, though? How are your fibroids now?
Well, they're still in there lingering around. But I've got more management of them, because I'm more in tune with my body now. Mm. So I know how to manage them. I know when they're going to hurt more than not.
Okay.
It's been a long journey. So I think I won't say I've mastered them, but I'm just a lot more in tune with myself. And, you know, as my body changes, it's like a new lesson every time. Because, you know, I'm going into my 40s now, and I'm sure my body's going to change in different ways too. Mm-hmm. And just learning how my body works, and
I'm always learning new things, and yeah, it's great, but they're still in there. And you know, who knows? Like, I don't have any children. I don't know if I would ever have children, and I don't know what would happen if I were to have a child. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. A friend of mine was suggesting that I find out what the new therapies are and explore new therapies, since so much has obviously changed.
Yeah, that's true.
2007. So that's something I might look into, but I think the best thing, like I said, to come out of it is that I'm much more, I take much more of a holistic approach to my life, and I've learned a lot more about my body. I mean, my mind, quantum physics, the way my mind works, the way it's connected to my body, my health. Yeah. And I think that's been the best thing to come out of all of this. I'm much more in control of the whole of me as opposed to just one part of me.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. This is so inspiring, by the way. This just listening to you and your journey. So this is great.
It's been crazy ups and downs, but I think, you know, you kind of have to just go with it and see where it all leads, I guess.
Yeah. So do you still have the nine fibroids? Nine grow back, or?
Well, the last time they checked, I think it was just six, but that was in when they grew back in 2014. I haven't actually had them like do a scan again. The last time at the doctor, like last year when I went to get my annual and stuff, he was like, yeah, he literally put his hand on them. He was like, yeah, here's one here, here's one
here. Oh, wow.
Because I guess, you know, he's good. You can feel them. And he's like, yeah, give me your hand. You feel that one? And it was so weird because I do feel them because I give myself like massages.
Okay.
And I do like the, you know, when you put, what's it called? When you put the coconut oil, not castor oil, and you do the warm, like wrapping thing. I do that. And I massage as well because it helps with like regulating pain management near my period and stuff. Okay. So I knew they were there and I could feel them, but he made me feel all of them. So I think we've got about four, but I'm not sure. So, but he's like, nothing else is going on. So, like, you know, just see how it goes. But every doctor that I've gone to has said to me, there's no way that we will suggest you have a hysterectomy because that's the last thing we want.
Yeah, that's going to be like the last resort, if at all.
They hate it. They hate any kind of major surgery.
Yeah.
And so they're there, and I don't really know how many are there, but I think I'm going to be going to get my annual very soon. I usually get it around my birthday every year and get the full checkup. So I'm going to have them see what's really going on in there in terms of like sizes and how much are there, and see what my options are. If there's something that could potentially remove them, I don't know, because they always seem to grow back, it seems. So
they say they're more likely to recur in Black women. I don't know.
Why I'm
not sure, because it seems like we have a completely different experience to white women. So we're more likely to develop fibroids at a younger age. We're more likely to develop multiple fibroids, and the fibroids that we develop are more likely to be quite more aggressive. So they're more likely to grow quite quickly. So it looks like, in a way,
brown women suffer.
Yeah,
from
yeah.
South Asian women as well.
Yeah.
So.
So in a way, it feels like we have probably a different type of fibroids to white women. In a way, because of the characteristics that, you know, we get developed younger, more likely to get multiple, they're more likely to grow quickly.
So, but I think there's so many factors that contribute to this. Yeah, you know, it's lifestyle, it's diet, it's food, it's hereditary. Because my mom doesn't have fibroids, but my sister does.
Yeah, I was going to ask if any other
had a hysterectomy. She had a hysterectomy. So, okay. But she had one child and she didn't want any more kids anyway. So okay. I think it's a confluence of factors that contributes to
So generally speaking, they just say it's a combination of kind of different factors, so genetic, lifestyle, environmental factors that all come together and increase a woman's risk of developing fibroids. So it's a combination of things, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's move on to now what lessons you've learned. I know one of the lessons from the blog was that your fibroids helped you get in touch with your feminine self. Do you want to explain a bit more about that?
I think just going back to what I was saying before, having my acupuncturist really, it's sit down in detail to me, you know, okay, fine, you know what your womb is and you know what everything in there does, but do you actually understand how it's connected to who you are as a woman, what it does for you, what this cycle means every month, what it means for your emotions, what it means, like just how it really regulates your life? That was probably the biggest lesson. I think when you study things like femininity, it always seems very surface level, very, very kind of shallow, like, oh, you know, femininity is, you know, dress a certain way, act a certain way.
High heels.
Yeah, all of that stuff that just has nothing to do with what femininity is. And I learned a lot about femininity from a perspective of, you know, how you live your life, how you work with other people, your outlook, your ability to stop trying to not want to control everything, to be the receiver, to understand that you are a creator, just all of these different kinds of things that I had no clue about before. Mm-hmm. But I think that's because the society that we live in, it's very much about being in your masculine energy much more than in your feminine energy.
It is.
And women are rewarded for performing in their masculine energy much more so than their feminine energy, because everything feminine is deemed weak and ridiculed, right? So some of us never actually learn these things, or we, like myself, we learn later in life, or I don't know, it's just not the kind of thing. I think our grandmothers and our great-grandmothers had these sort of innate wisdoms in them when times were different. Yeah. But I think now with just the way the world is now, it's just not the kind of thing that women know or that women understand. So I think that for me has been the biggest lesson, like just reassessing, okay, what exactly is it that I'm doing, and why am I doing these things, and is it aligned with who I am? It's like Simon Sinek, you know, begin with why. What's your why, and why do you want to do it? And I think it happened at a time when I was transitioning anyway, because I knew I needed to get out of this corporate world because I have all these other things I wanted to do. So it was almost like aligning values, you know, like, okay, this is what I want. How do I want to do this? How, you know, how are these things that I'm doing now affecting my body? And what exactly is it that I need to do? So that's probably been the biggest lesson.
And such an important lesson as well. Wow.
Yeah.
And just a big one.
Appreciating what I am as a woman, and appreciating it for myself, and realizing that there's a lot of power in that, that has nothing to do with external validation or external power, or, you know, hair and makeup and all that other crap. Of course not. Like, just really deep stuff that you don't learn this stuff in school. You don't learn that, you know, most of us don't even learn it at home. So it was definitely an eye-opener and a good one too.
Yeah, that's a really good deep lesson. So hopefully I think that would give a lot of our listeners something to reflect on. So we're gonna slowly come to the end of our interview, but I just want to end with two questions. The first thing is, looking at your experience, maybe looking at maybe your friends' experiences of fibroids, what do you think can be done by all players, the NHS, doctors, charities, and organizations like ourselves, Lake Health and Wellbeing, to address some of the challenges that women with fibroids encounter?
I think it's really about awareness, raising awareness, just like anything else. If you have a campaign and you raise awareness, you know, once upon a time, remember back in the 80s, HIV was, I mean, it was, no one wanted HIV. No one understood HIV. It was the worst thing. Now HIV is almost discussed. It's very, you know, it's very casual. Very sort of, okay, yeah, she has HIV, but she's living, she's fine, she's married, she has a child. And that's because of awareness. That's because of campaigns and education and so on. And I think the same thing can be applied with fibroids. I think every ailment, every problem can be a big part of solving it is through awareness. So I think people sharing their stories, and organizations like yours helping, giving people a platform to share their stories and helping people to share. And doctors just, I think some doctors need to educate themselves more. I think maybe they need to make leeway for others who have more experience in these particular areas and say, you know what, this is not what I'm good at, but I can suggest a place that you can go or what you can do. And I think at the end of the day, that's really what's going to help a lot of people. And then we just kind of start normalizing it, and more people are talking, and it doesn't become so taboo, and it doesn't become this thing that we have to live with and suffer with in silence.
Okay, great stuff. So awareness, and I think we can agree with that. Awareness is key.
Yeah, definitely. And the work that you do is so important, because if I knew about the Lake Foundation back in 2007, maybe my journey would have been a little bit different.
So we'll just keep plodding on and seeing what we can do to support women. So just to end off, so what tips and advice would you give to women who maybe have just been diagnosed with fibroids? Like, what would you say from your experience is would be something that they should do in terms of the tips and advice?
I think I would repeat what I said in my blog, which is ultimately you've got to know your body. Mm-hmm. You're the only person that knows your body. You know your body better than any doctor, than any nurse. You are in control of your body. You occupy this space every day, 24 hours a day, every day of your life. And you have got to know what works, how it works. You need to be so in tune with your body that you know what's going to happen even before it's happened. And that takes a lot of work. And I think that's the best advice I would give to anybody who's not just been diagnosed with fibroids, but with anything. I think there's so much power that comes when you know your body. And I mean, really know your body. You know, like I haven't eaten by 3 o'clock. I know what's going to happen because this is what my body does when I do this or when I do that. I mean, you really, really need to understand what's going on in there and really try to be in tune with it, because I think all of these ailments and all of these things that we suffer from, yes, there's the environment and there's the hereditary and there's all that stuff. But I think sometimes some of it could be minimized if we just knew more about our bodies generally.
And that's really true, and that's very powerful. So thank you so much for that useful piece of advice, and thank you so much, Joanne, for joining us today and sharing your experience. Like I said, I know it can be difficult sometimes talking about health issues, and so we're so grateful that you've been so open with us. So thank you so much,
Joanne. It's fine, my pleasure. I'm happy to discuss my fibroid drama. It's fine.
Thank you so much.
I'll update you again 10 years from now.
Yes, we'll definitely have to have regular check-ins with you so that people can follow your journey as it progresses. And so if people want to learn a bit more about the work you're doing over in China, the work you're doing with Rare Birds, where can they find out more about you?
Well, right now, Rare Birds is still Secret Birds. Secret Birds at secretbirdshq.com. But I'm also very active in social media, so you can find me, Joanne A. Hamilton, on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter, J. Alexandra Hamilton, Hamill on Twitter, or just email me at mainbirdsecretbirds@gmail.com. And I respond. I'm very quick with the emails. I'm pretty social. So social media, I'm very good up with LinkedIn. If you message me on LinkedIn, I message you back in pretty quickly in normal business hours. And you can find that. Of course, you can find out more about the work I'm doing. But I just want to take a minute to say thank you so much for all the work that you're doing and for inviting me to share my story. And it's really nice to be able to talk freely and openly about this, knowing that there are other women who are experiencing this or who can learn from this. And I don't like to give advice, but if sharing my story helps somebody else to figure out what's going on with them, then that's a good thing, right?
You're very welcome, and thank you so much, Joanne. So we will hopefully keep in touch, and maybe we'll do a 5-year interview in 5 years' time and see how you're doing.
Yeah, I hear you guys might be having a fibroid conference or something in St. Kitts. I would love to do that. Aren't you guys doing something like that soon?
We've got a couple of things planned. I mean, the first is that we're trying to organize our fibroids webinar series, which will start in October, November time. And so this webinar series is going to feature experts, consultant gynecologists, experts in diet, exercise, and counseling, and nutrition. So we're going to have a nice platform where women can come together and get expert advice, but also share their experiences. So that's coming up. And then I'm also working in St. Kitts on a fibroid survey to try and understand the experience of women in St. Kitts with fibroids. Trying to just see what challenges women over here are experiencing and if there's anything that we can do to kind of support. And then the final thing that we're looking at in terms of events is that We're teaming up with Noir Wellness to see if we can organize our event in St. Kitts, a fibroid wellness retreat.
Yeah.
So we're in the very, very early stages.
That's amazing.
Then we'll let people know.
Well, keep up all the great work. And anything I can do to support or help, I'm always happy to do so.
Oh, thank you. And thank you so much for joining us. And thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of our podcast. We hope you found it interesting. And what I will do is I will leave a lot of details in the show notes so that you can access more information about fibroids. And also I will leave Joanne's contact details in the show notes as well. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. And we'll see you next week. Take care. Bye. Bye, Joanne.
Bye. Bye for now. See you. Bye.